Ryan Hurd, you have not talked on the radio in a while. What are you talking about?
I've been making an album for a while, and now it's time to go talk about it.
And that's what you're doing. Welcome back to Absolute Radio Country.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the UK.
I love being over here. I have a lot of incredible memories of playing shows here, and I was one of the earlier artists to play C2C. So this is cool. I mean, this is the first set of promo that we're doing for Midwest Rock and Roll.
Mm-hmm. So, is it all coming back like riding a bicycle?
You know what, man? I love talking about myself. So this is,
perfect.
This is fantastic.
That's what we're here to do.
Exactly.
So this is working out. So yeah. Far, so good.
Absolutely. No, I'm a little nervous. But I
why are you nervous?
It's a new thing. And anytime you release music, you want people to like it. And
right.
You want it to be successful.
But, sure.
I don't know. At this point, I'm just excited to get it. I've been saying this thing, and I think the people that work with me are kind of annoyed at me, but I was saying, like, get this record off my desk. Because it's been completed for a really long time, and I've just, like, had to shuffle some stuff to get it out. And I thought it was going to come out March of last year.
Oh, wow. It has been.
It is March of this year that it's coming out. So
what's taken so long?
Well, personal life got a little crazy, and so that it just took me a second to get on my feet again.
Yeah,
working, and then I had to.
But that's fair enough, though. I mean, you can't beat yourself up about that.
Oh no, I'm not saying it as like a. I'm just saying that's what happened.
Yeah,
it wasn't a good time to put any music out, and Sony. I was working at Sony Records, and I love Sony in Nashville. They were incredibly great to me. We had a really good run, had a lot of success, and then.
However.
And split up, I suppose is how you'd say that. They were very kind to me on the way out, and I'm really just thankful for Randy and Taylor and everybody there. And then put the first two songs for this album out last year. Everyone puts the first single out to an album a year before the record
comes
out.
Yeah, I know. I'm always confused by that, yeah.
So
I'll be like, we've been playing that for a year, and now it's brand new.
Well, I didn't mean for that to happen, but it did. So we put the
not
first two songs on this album out independently, and then... We ended up getting an opportunity to sign with Big Machine Records,
mm-hmm.
Which is very cool for me. I'm a writer for that company already, and so it was just a very natural step to take this album, but that took a second to get onboarded and have a new management team now, which is amazing, and I love... The hard part for me, I think, in the last year is having like so many new things happen with my music and with my life, and so some of that stuff just takes a second to get settled.
Sure.
And so now that we kind of have everything, it's very weird to look around and be like, this is all brand new for me. It's very strange, but it is very cool, and I'm really lucky to be surrounded by amazing people. And I think that just musically I'm in a really special place. I made this record, I finished it all, wrote it all and finished it all like right before Marin and I split up, and I really wanted it to be put out the way I intended to originally.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's one thing I want people to know is like, this is a really, there's some personal songs on here and they might sound a little left-footed just based on what has happened to in our lives. But they're still very true to me. They're still, I think, speak to my fans and to their lives. And I also think like it's a timestamp of my life of like a really special and amazing time. And
did it make you reevaluate like some of the songs that would be on it when that happened?
At first I thought I had to scrap it, but no.
You thought you had to scrap the entire album?
There's some love songs on there that kind of, I don't know if they mean the same thing or
sure,
but they do actually mean the same thing to me. I'm not going to back away from that. I just, I don't know. I guess I didn't really know what music was going to look like for me.
Right. And also, I guess knowing, you know, anytime that you release any sort of art and put it out into the world, if it's successful and people connect with it, then you know you're going to be kind of repeating those emotions over and over again, good or bad, right?
Sure.
And so when you're in the middle of something like that and you're kind of finding your feet again and you've got this album that was written pre that, and then did you ever have to think like, oh, okay, well, I'm going to have to do that over and over and over again. And do I want to do that over and over again?
I don't feel like that about this album.
Okay.
I feel like that about whatever comes next.
Okay.
So whatever the next thing after Midwest Rock and Roll is, like, I just feel like I does it need to be said, right? Like, that's kind
right.
of my
I got you.
My thought process going forward is like, yeah, we can talk all about this and be really detailed. And
oh, you're talking about
like if
a breakup album, sure. album, right?
It, you
okay.
know, obviously, like those songs are written. It's sort of like how you what. Do you have to say that? It's
yeah.
kind of how I...
It turns out in country music, a lot of people have to say that.
You don't.
a lot of people
know.
Say
I
that.
I mean, I think the cool part about, like, staring at, like, the last year of my life is, like, I'm in a really good spot, and I'm really proud of myself as a parent and as a person, and I'm proud of myself as, like, working in music. I didn't know if I was going to do any more artist work. Like, that was...
Yeah, because your thing was being a writer, right? Mm-hmm. I'm sure we've talked before that when you kind of... went to Nashville and started yeah. out your musical career. It was all about being a writer. And with huge success, we should point out, you've written some absolutely massive songs for some absolutely massive people. So
it still is what I'm passionate about.
Right.
Almost more so than this. Like,
okay.
The nice part about being a writer is I can just be creative 90% of my time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you've noticed this about being an artist, but it's not very creative. Look what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
This is 90% of it is promo.
I'm feeling pretty creative TikTok. Though, Ryan, to be honest here, so.
I'm not saying you're not a creative person. I'm just saying what we're doing right now
yeah.
is promotion.
Yeah,
and
of course.
So
no, we're getting to know each other.
What I love about writing is it is creative 100% of the time. So that to me is, and I've had a lot of success doing it, and it's
you
really,
have.
And it's a safety blanket. So
yeah.
for me, it's like, well, I can just stay home and write 4 times a week and.
Never have to put on pants.
Never. We generally wear pants. But I think it's been a really special time to be like, no, man, I still got stuff to say. I still
yeah.
got things I want to do, and I still wake up dreaming about making records. I don't dream about touring as much anymore.
Right.
But I do, like, still make track lists in my head.
Okay.
And as soon as I'm done, when my brain stops making track lists in my head, then that's when we're done making records.
I suppose, though, as a writer, you know, going back to the quote-unquote breakup album that you're not going to write, as a writer, you could write that, and then it's kind of not in your mouth, if that makes sense. Do you know what I mean?
I think...
Like, you could write those songs for someone else.
Sure.
But I'm only saying because sometimes people, I find, about whatever it might be, right, sometimes just getting it out. Is
yeah.
the work. And it's not necessarily like me getting it out and saying it on the radio, but just like writing it down, putting it in an email that you don't send, et cetera. Like that's an option. Blake Shelton could be singing that.
I worked through a lot of stuff by writing down a lot of things that no one will ever hear.
Okay. Yeah.
So that is 100% true what you're saying. And I also like, I don't really do this. The times that I've put songs out for thinking that they would be successful are the ones that are the least successful.
That's just life all over.
So for me, I have found that the more I do it just for me, the
mm-hmm.
more I do the music part, the artist part, just like I love that. There's a song on my record called Lighthouse, and it's the imagery and all of it, it's just for me. It's like my story in my head that I wanted to write down. And it turns out it's one on the record that people who've heard it gravitate to quite a bit.
That's so all the way. That is just exactly what usually happens with something that is so personal that you think that nobody else can relate to it. And you come to find out like you are so not alone
mm-hmm.
in that. And that people listening to it go, oh my God, I'm not alone in this. That's
yes.
a beautiful thing.
And those are the ones that other artists, when you're a writer, gravitate toward.
Mm-hmm.
Because they can feel how, like, if it meant something to you, everybody has a personal experience of their own life, but most of their experiences, whether that's emotional or whatever, are universal. Like, we've all gone
mm-hmm.
through a lot of the same things.
Yeah.
Every single person in here has either fallen in love or lost a relationship, or those things are not just unique to me. So
mm-hmm.
if I write about my experience doing that, and I do it in a really, really, in a great way that connects emotionally with me, and it makes me go, oh my God, that hurts. Somebody else who's an artist, if I pitch them that song, they're like, oh my God, that hurts. I have to sing this.
Yeah.
My fans are going to love this. So I've found that the more I do, there's two sides of that coin. Like, one is the more I do it for me, the more successful it seems to be. And at the same time, the music is meant to be shared. It's not done until it's on a till you see it on your phone, right? Mm-hmm. That when other people start to hear it, like that's the other half of it that we don't always talk about is like, you're not done until it's released. And stuff that doesn't get released is just unfinished music. And so that's the other thing I've had to like come to terms with is like, how much of your professional life do you want to remain unfinished? Mm-hmm. So I'm still in it. I still love, this is only my second full-length album. I love the way we did it. We went about slowly on purpose. That's another reason that it took so long. But I took an entire year, 2023, and I was like, I'm going to make an album slowly. That was part of the reason that I needed to find another home for just somebody to understand what was my thought process. We don't do a lot of that in Nashville, Tennessee, or really anywhere. It's like,
what, slowly, you mean?
Work intentionally and slowly without like a single cycle in mind.
Right.
Like we work in single cycles, and when that single's done, they're like, we need one right now. And I was like, well, I don't have anything. I just put an album out and you're asking me to start over again and I don't have anything. So I need to go home. I need to write. I need to explore this. And so that's kind of what I did, was go home and I started writing and I started recording. We'd had five studio sessions, days. And we would go back to Aaron's studio and grind down a little more and grind down it a little more. And then I'd write a little more. And that's kind of how I like to make albums. And then when the album's done, we put it out, we do the promotion. And if there's singles that we can work, that's amazing. But it has to start for me at that intentional, creative, whatever. And the nice part is I've had so much time just with things flipping upside down that like I have a whole backlog of music now that I just cannot wait to start working on, because I just need to get this album off my desk a little bit. But
well, this album is out of your in-tray. It's into ours now. Die For It is the latest single, right?
Yes.
Tell us about this one.
I just, when I wrote it, I knew that the rest of the album was going to sound like this. I had Midwest Rock and Roll written in my phone. I knew that was going to be a song. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what it was going to be, but I was like, that's going to be a song and maybe an album title. And then when we wrote Die For It, I was like, that's the sound. That's what we're doing. And then the next time we sat down, I wrote Midwest Rock and Roll.
Right.
So this song kind of informs the rest of it sonically. But also I just loved the lyric of, I just thought it was a really honest approach to the two sides of the same coin, which would be like being in a relationship with somebody. Like sometimes it's a feeling and sometimes it's a choice.
Mm.
And I think both of those things are there's not one that's more important than the other, to be honest. So I love too that we've gotten this in country music, the sonic umbrella has gotten so wide.
Yeah.
So I can do this record now where maybe I couldn't 5 years ago, and people would have looked at me and been like, that's not a country record. But like Hardy made a just a rock record recently, and he's about as much of a country artist as anybody in the entire that's ever existed. So I think that album going so far left of what we generally do kind of just opened up. Like, it doesn't make mine seem too rock and roll at all.
Right.
So, and also the way that we write lyrics, too, it's very formatted, very verse, chorus, verse, bridge, chorus. I still write like that, where everything rhymes correctly, and that's just how we do it in country music. So I think that lyrically, this is absolutely, it's definitely my best work. It's also my, I think, still lyrically fits under that umbrella quite easily.
Midwest Rock and Roll is the album. Die For It is the single. It's been a while since you've been to the UK, right?
To play, yeah.
I mean, at all?
I've come with every time either to play or to like, because Maren was playing over here.
Right.
So last time I was here was last time she was here, I think. Unless she was here and I forgot last year. But yeah, it's been about 18 months since I've been over.
So what are you going to do this time? Because you're only doing what you're doing one show, right? It's one show.
Well, I'm doing something else.
Oh yeah, you're doing an Abbey Road thing.
Yeah.
Yes. So, is Abbey Road a bucket list thing for you?
It is now. I mean, it's not something you ever think you're going to get to do.
Okay.
So, when we, I don't know. I guess this is album promo, isn't it? Let's talk about the album. So, I have a song on my album called Paul. And the last time that I was at the Grammys, we were nominated for Circles Around This Town, and we had to go to all of these parties after the Grammys. The Grammys is cool. The Grammys is the coolest thing on the planet. Anyone who tells you differently is just like, I don't know how you can have a bad time. It's the most glamorous thing you'll ever see. There's superstars everywhere. Mm. And it's early because everything has to work with the East Coast television slot.
Of course.
So everything at the Grammys in LA is early. So the show's early. So you have all this time at night for parties and stuff. So we were going to go to three parties. And the first one was the one we really wanted to go to, but it was total. It'd be like, I don't know, London and LA are similar to get around it.
They're geographically spread out. Yeah.
Very spread out. So the first party was nowhere, like 45 minutes from the second party. So we had to leave early, basically before everyone got there. But that was Greg Kurstin, who is a massive producer, and Dave Grohl's party.
Mm.
And we made a record in Hawaii with Greg, met all these people, became friends with them. And I should say Maren made it. We were there writing for it. So anyway, we're friends with these people, and Greg, we're about to leave, and he said, oh, you got to come meet Paul. I said, okay. Greg, we got to go. We don't have time to meet your friend Paul. He's like, no, you got to meet him. And he grabs us and takes us across the room. There's probably, like, I'm not kidding, like 30 people at this party. And, like, all of a sudden, like, you realize he's introducing you to Paul McCartney. And so we walk over, and Greg says, hey, Paul, these are my friends, Maren and Ryan. I said, okay. Hi, nice to meet you. And he's like, did you guys win a Grammy? I'm not going to do a British accent. I'm not going to disrespect Sir Paul in that way. But he said, did you guys win a Grammy? He's just like a professional at meeting people. Mm. Just so like disarming and like, nope. He's like, me neither. And then we just started talking. And I had my tuxedo on still and my shirt's like kind of unbuttoned. I think I look cool. I look like a dope. And I have my bow tie like kind of untied.
Oh, very James Bond.
Yeah, I'm like, thank you. That's what I thought. I don't know if anyone agreed. But he grabs my tie and he's like, oh man, I love the way that you have your tie like this. My wife's always trying to get me to wear my tie like this for these things, the Grammys. And he's like, honey, come check out this guy's tie. And she's like, oh, I love that. Paul, you need to wear that next time we come to one of these things, the Grammys again. And I was like, okay, so I don't know how to tie a real one, man. I had a clip on for the show. He's like, no one knows how to tie these things. I said, all right, well, it's nice to meet you. And he's like, yeah, I hope you have a great rest of your night. And then we left and we get in the van and everyone's silent. And it's like, we forgot to get a picture.
Oh.
So I went home and I started writing this song called Paul about meeting Paul McCartney. And it's everything in the song is what happened and nothing in the song didn't. Like, there's nothing that didn't happen that ended up in there, and there wasn't enough that I needed all of the information to write the whole thing because it was such a short interaction. But I ended up using it as a device to, like, tie back into, like, when I started writing music or got into music. It's because my dad, I remember he had, like, a 6-CD changer in our house. And I remember he had, like, the first Randy Travis.
That's fancy, a 6-CD changer.
It was a big deal.
Yeah.
And we had a nice, like, we had some good speakers. Anyway, but he had a record player, a turntable, and so we would play Beatles 45s.
Right.
So Let It Be was one of the first, like, core musical memories for me. So, like, I talk about, like, the reason I make music is because my dad played Let It Be on 45. So I tie the whole song back into, like, I met this guy, he's a musical hero for the entire world. I got to shake his hand. And that's, like, such a full circle musical moment for me. So anyway, when I signed my new deal at Big Machine, they're like, well, do you have any ideas? I said, yeah, I want to do Paul live from Abbey Road. They're like, okay. And I said, yeah. And I'm going to, until someone tells me no, that's what we're going to do. And nobody ever told me no. So here we are. So tomorrow we're going into Abbey Road and we're going to record Paul live from Abbey Road and one other track for the deluxe on our record, and which will come out, I think, a handful of weeks after Midwest drops on March 21st, Midwest Rock and Roll by Ryan Hurd, March 21st. And then we'll have the deluxe come a little bit after, but that's like, we get to be here and record in the most famous recording studio in the entire world about a guy who made that the most famous recording studio in the world and how that ties back to my life. So
what a trip.
It is a very cool, I don't know why they're letting me do that. But
you're doing a show, you're going to Abbey Road, and then you get to go hang out in a pub and have a pint. I mean, it sounds like you're on holiday.
Yeah, it sounds like it. It sounds like it.
Living the dream.
It's a great trip,
Reinhardt.
I love being over here, and I love getting the opportunity to do this. I mean, that's there. I told you there was a moment where I didn't really know what this looked like for me. I was like, well, maybe I'll just go write songs, which I love doing, and it's the greatest lifestyle in the world is to be a songwriter, and it doesn't require much of you. It requires, I mean, we show up at 11 and leave by 4, and that's, we call that a full day.
So that's like a long day, actually, in radio land.
Yeah, there you go.
That's exhausting just thinking about
it. So I thought maybe I'll just do that. I don't know. Maybe I'll go. But I do. I still make track lists in my head. I have to keep going doing this. And I love making records. I love writing songs. And I'm really proud of this album finally getting into the world.
Well, we are so happy it's into the world. Thank you for sharing it with us.
Yeah.
And thanks for coming by and saying howdy in between Abbey Road and the pub.
Well, hey, and thanks for all your support. I've always loved when I see just anyone from the UK just talking about my music and the fact that we get to go play a show tonight in another country and people actually are coming to it.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild. I always just imagine we're going to be playing for an empty room, but it'll be fun tonight to see everybody, so yeah.
Well, don't leave it so long next time, yeah?
Yeah, we'll be back.
All right. Yeah. We will see you then. Reinhardt, a pleasure and a joy. Thank you.
Thank you.